My wife doesn't like to be scared. She doesn't enjoy scary movies or even tense thrillers. It causes her too much anxiety, too much tension, too much adrenaline rush. We've been married for 26 years, and the last time I took her to a haunted house was 26 years ago. Just recently, her sister Jill moved to Kansas City. Now, Jill does like scary movies and haunted houses and things like that. And I've gone over to Jill's house to watch a scary movie with her that my wife won't watch at home. This past Friday was Jill's birthday. You can imagine my surprise when a couple weeks ago, my wife came to me, it's important for historical artifacts that we record the series of events correctly. My wife came to me and said, Jill's birthday. For her birthday, I thought maybe we'd take her out to dinner. And I was like, well, yeah, that sounds nice. Sure, we can go somewhere nice for dinner. And she goes, and then I thought we'd take her to Worlds of Fun for the haunted houses. I'm confused. When you say we, what do you mean by that? Because I'm sure Jill would love to go to the haunted houses, and I would love to go to the haunted houses, but I'm assuming you're including yourself in this we proclamation. So Friday night, we went to dinner, had a nice dinner. Then we headed up to Worlds of Fun. Now, I like going to Worlds of Fun for the haunted houses because they have 9 haunted houses there. Right? If you go down to the Edge of Hell or the Beast down in the West Bottoms, it's about $20 a person to get in, and you go through one haunted house. Well, I can go out to Worlds of Fun, I can pay $40, I can go through 9 of them. So it's much better value for my buck. Not to mention, I like haunted houses. I used to work in the haunted houses at Worlds of Fun as one of their monsters. Which is why Sam and my conversation this morning about who's a monster and who's not is, I was kind of grinning. I was like, yeah, I used to be one of the monsters, so I like going through haunted houses. So we go up to Worlds of Fun. We pay to get in. My daughter and her fiance were with us as well, so there's 5 of us. Now, the way they do it, they've got 9 haunted houses throughout the park, but as you go through the park, they've taken sections of the outdoor area, these sidewalks you have to walk from one area to another, and they've turned them into kind of outdoor scary spots. So, like, for about 100 yards, there'll be fog machines and lights and monsters out in the open as you're walking to the haunted houses. So we walked into the park. We get up to one of these first outdoor areas. We're going to a haunted house that's on the other side. We must go through this section to get there. We take about 6 steps in. Standing in the middle of the sidewalk is this kid. He's probably 6'4". He has on this gruesome animal mask. He has shoulder pads under his costume. His costume is this ragged, torn stuff. And he's just standing there. He's not hiding. We can see him plain as day. He's huge. We can see him. My wife comes walking in. She's grabbed a hold of her sister's arm. They are arm in arm. Now, Jackie asked me, she said, you've worked in the haunted houses. She goes, how did you know who to scare? And I said, well, it's pretty easy. You look at the people that aren't making eye contact with you. I said, if they won't look at you, they're scared to look at you, that's where you start. I said, that's usually, so look at them. Look at them and talk to them. I said, they'll assume you're not scared. So we go walking in. I see this big kid stand there, and I'm like, that's nice. Like, you know, I walk right by him. He doesn't do a thing. My wife and her sister come walking up. I swear to you, all this kid did was glanced at my wife and growled. She immediately abandoned her sister, spun around, and walked back out. Nope, 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 nope. Not going to do it. Nope, nope, nope. She said, I am not in the right place emotionally to go through this. I said, that's going to be a problem. We're just at the beginning. We have another 4 hours of this. Nope, not going to do it. Nope, nope, no. again, I want to reiterate, came to me with this idea, not Mark's idea. 26 years, I know better. I said, you got to go through. I said, we're going to that haunted house that's on the other side. She goes, I'll wait here. I said, you can't wait here. We're not going to come back this way. Finally, what motivated her was the monster saw us arguing and came out to her. At which point she decided, fine, I'll go through it. Now, my wife has an interesting fight or flight mechanism. Her sister, who likes haunted houses, her fight or flight mechanism is she screams. Ah! When she says, my wife swings. Now, I know this, right? Because I've been on the receiving end of some of those, so I know what's coming. So as we went through the haunted houses, I'd put my hands behind me and grab her hands. Because I didn't want her to hit any of the monsters. You're not allowed to touch them. They're not allowed to touch you. You can't touch them. If she hits one of them, we'll get kicked out of the park. So I'm holding her hands. She is talking the entire time. She's talking to the monsters. You can't touch me. You can't touch me. He's holding my hands so I don't hit you. He's holding my hands so I don't hit you. Don't touch me. Don't touch me. I'm done. I'm done. We can leave now. We can leave now. I'm done. I'm done. I was like, that's great. We're in the middle of the haunted house. There's no way out. We have to keep going. She actually went through a couple of the haunted houses. I was amazed. We got home, and you would have thought she had run a marathon. Her clothes are, she's sweat through her clothes. She's exhausted. She's sitting on the couch at home. And this is where I broach the subject. What made you suggest this for your sister's birthday? I wouldn't in a million years have suggested you go through haunted houses. I was like, why would you even offer it up? And she looked at me and she said, well, it wasn't about me. It was Jill's birthday. I knew she would like it. We're going to talk about money. It's fall when we conduct our annual stewardship campaign. That's where we ask you folks to consider what you are giving, to look ahead to the next year, consider what you might give, what you could give, where we sit down and we wrestle with our budget for 2019. Our finance committee has been hard at work these last few months on this and has asked me to talk about stewardship for the next few weeks. As we gear up for this process, we do this every year. We ask you to consider what you're giving, to look ahead, estimate what you can give. From that, we try to establish what we can spend on mission and ministry and staff and repairs and upkeep. If I'm being honest with you, I don't like talking about money from the pulpit. For the simple reason, I benefit directly from your giving. When you give money, a portion of that goes into my pocket. It pays my salary. So I'm a little squeamish about standing here reading from the Bible to you about tithing and giving and all the sacrifices you should be making and asking for money knowing that I'm going to get some of it. Kind of feels very close to self-promotion in my heart. And especially now, when our giving is falling short of our budget and we're looking for areas to trim and cut, and I stand up here acknowledging that if we don't make budget, it directly impacts me. But then I remembered something, the lesson my wife reinforced with her brave sacrifice to go to haunted houses, which again was her idea and not mine. I remembered it's not all about me. Stewardship is about you. Stewardship is about the other. It's not a selfish, self-centered, self-focused thing. Stewardship is about another. We give because God has called each of us to give. In our own way, God has said, I need you to be generous, to be compassionate, to sacrifice, to give of ourselves, to not focus on us, but on others. That is our call as disciples, as followers of Jesus. To answer this call, it's not all about me, It's not all about self. We give to be faithful, to be Christ-like. We give because we are thankful for all of God's providence in our lives. We give because we are called to be kind and caring. We give that we might be last and not first. Stewardship is about the other. Not about my hang-ups about money. Not about what I can get out of it. Stewardship is about you answering the call God has placed on your heart and spirit to give. The first disciples struggled with this perspective. As they walked to Capernaum that day, they were still arguing about position and power and influence, still arguing about which me got to sit at the right hand of Jesus, which me would be the most important, the most recognized, the most awarded when Jesus was king. So he asked them, "What were you arguing about on the way?" But they were silent. For on the way, they had argued with one another who was the greatest. He sat down and called the 12 and said to them, "Whoever wants to be first must be last of all and servant of all." Then he took a little child and put it among them, and taking it in his arms, he said to them, "Whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes not me, but the one who sent me. Whoever wants to be first must be last." It's not about me. It's not about what I have. It's about who you serve. Because in serving others, you serve God. In placing yourself last, you move ahead in the line that matters. In serving, you rise. And then he makes this comparison for them. He brings a child into their midst and says, "Whoever welcomes this child." Why a child? Was it perhaps because the child had no power, no influence, no position in society? The child was among the weak, was among the least of these. They could gain nothing from welcoming this child. When they came into a town and they saw the city elders, or they saw the people in the marketplace, or they saw the leaders of the synagogue, they recognized who the people with power and position in a community were, and oftentimes were drawn to those people. But Jesus placed someone who was powerless among them, someone who had no influence, someone who had no place, and said, this child is who you should be welcoming, because you can't get anything back from them. This child really can't owe you one. They have nothing to offer. If you truly want to put yourself last, then you have to get behind the person who's last in line. And this child was the one who was last in line. Jesus gives us the role we're to follow. Welcome this child. Kids have an amazing wide-eyed innocence. Think back to when you were a child. We didn't worry about things like money and budgets, the cost of things. I remember when Abby was about 9 years old, we were getting ready to go on vacation, and oftentimes, like many 8 and 9 year olds, whenever we would go somewhere, Abby would see something she wanted, and she would say, "Can I have that?" And we would have to have the debate about whether or not I wanted her to have that, and whether or not I was going to spend money on it. So before we took a vacation when she was 9, we handed her one of those little Visa cards you can get, and you can put money on it. We put $50 on it. And we said, "For this whole week of vacation, this is yours. You don't have to ask me for stuff. You don't have to ask me if you can get something. This is yours to use. You want to spend it all in the first hour? Or you want to save it all and spend it? It's up to you how this is spent." It was the first time she'd had to consider the cost of things. She'd never considered what things cost, whether or not we had the money for them, whether it would fit in our budget, what we would have to give up in order to have that thing. For the first time, she was managing her money. Let me tell you something. As a 9-year-old, my daughter was a tightwad. Gripped onto that with both hands. All week long, she would pick up something, and she would think about it. She'd get closer to the register. As she got closer to the register, she'd set it back down. It was an amazing learning opportunity for her to have the money in her hands. Kids don't think about that type of stuff. We wait until adulthood to bring on those worries and those struggles with money. Just this weekend, I had to go to the bank with my daughter's fiance. He was going to get a car loan, his first car loan. He's 22 years old. He's going to buy a used car. It wasn't a big loan. It was only $3,500, but he has literally, his credit rating is zero. He literally has no credit. So they needed a co-signer. So my wife and I went so we could co-sign with him. Took us a couple hours at the bank to get it all done. By the time we got home, he was just in shock with the whole process. Now, we've been very diligent about, can you afford this in your budget? Will this fit in your budget? Getting it down to a price that he could afford. That's why it took us so long while we were there. But he was still just overwhelmed by the process. And I think maybe it was one of the first times he stepped across that threshold from childhood to adulthood where now we got to start worrying about money. I even told him at one point, it kind of stinks to be an adult, doesn't it? We worry about money. We're scared about money. We're conflicted about money. Kids trust that their parents, their families are going to take care of their needs, their wants. They're going to be taken care of. As adults, we're called to have that same posture with God. We're called to trust that God will take care of our needs, that God will provide, to trust God to watch over us. And we give that position lip service in our worship and in our faith. We say, yes, Lord, we trust you. And then we go home and we fret and we pace the floor over money, over having enough of it, over getting enough of it, over saving enough of it, over how to spend it. Where there is envy and selfish ambition, there will be disorder and wickedness of every kind. These conflicts and disputes among you, where do they come from? Do they not come from your cravings that are at war within you? You want something and do not have it, so you commit murder. Now we read that and we think, well, I want stuff, but I've never wanted something so bad to kill somebody. But you know, think back for a second. In my greed, in my want, how many times have I killed a relationship with somebody over money? How many times have I killed somebody's spirit over money? How many times have I killed someone, not physically, but emotionally, over money? You covet something and cannot obtain it, so you engage in disputes and conflicts. Number one thing that married couples argue about, number one thing they get divorced about, haunted houses. Sorry, that's my relationship. Never mind. The number one thing always is money. Always, 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 always. The number one thing relationships break down over is money. You do not have because you do not ask. You ask and do not receive because you ask wrongly in order to spend what you get on your pleasures. And it's not all about me. Submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Draw near to God, and God will draw near to you. Well, if I'm trying to draw near to God, I have to figure out what's getting in the way, what's stopping me, what's standing between me and God, what's keeping me from placing my trust in my Heavenly Father like a child that God will provide and take care of me. And it's love of me. It's hard to break that focus. I love me. I'm one of my favorite people. I want me to have what I want. I want to be taken care of. I worry that I won't be. But oftentimes in my want, avarice sneaks in, that wanton lust, that want for it all, that desire to have more and more and more. Greed and selfish ambition, getting more for me, posturing, power grabbing, trying to shove your way to the front of the line. And that's not where we're supposed to be. Whoever wants to be first must be last of all and servant of all. As we enter into this season of contemplation and planning, as we discuss budgets and giving and tithing, as we ask all of you to consider prayerfully what you give, what you can give, as we as a church consider these gifts, these tithes, these sacrifices, and how we can use them to further God's kingdom, to spread that good news, to touch our world with Jesus. As we do all of this, and I must make sure that we stop for a moment and that we're thankful for the people on our finance committee, for the people who serve as trustees, for the board members who are currently wrestling with the budget and with stewardship and with giving. We appreciate all that they do. As we go through all of this, I hope you will take a pause to consider, where is my focus in all of this? Is it still on me, what I want, or am I focused on another? Who will my giving impact? Who will my sacrifice touch? Who will gain from my loss? Stewardship is not all about me, it's about the other. Jesus, who calls me to give, to be last if I want to be first, to be like that small child. The small child, the hungry person, the lost seeker who will benefit from my generosity, my kindness, my giving. The other, the one who will finally see the light in the darkness because I chose to give and shine it there. The one who will come to know Christ because I gave. Amen.